Liz, I am so happy that Framebridge is a sponsor of this episode of Satellite Sisters because I have the perfect job for Framebridge.
Oh, you have something special that requires framing? Preservation Liz. For the ages?
Yes, I do, Liz, because my book, The Marriage Sabbatical, was named a People magazine pick of the week. And guess who is on the cover of the People? My girl, Valerie Bertinelli. I mean, I want the magazine, and then I want to cut out the special, you know, mention of my book all in one frame. Wouldn't that be fantastic?
That's going to be fantastic. Plus, there's your head in a bubble. You have your book, the recommendation of your book, your head in a bubble, and Valerie Bertinelli. Framebridge it, baby.
Right. I mean, Framebridge is so good at framing unique and interesting items you want to display on your wall. Yeah. It's just used to be difficult to get that stuff framed and expensive, but Framebridge makes it so easy. So if you have travel souvenirs or original artwork or hotel key cards or menus or tickets or wedding invitations, Liz, do you want to frame a license plate? I know who can do it for you.
This is exciting, Lee, and welcome back, Framebridge.
And we love Framebridge because the quality is super high. Liz, both you and I have gotten personal things framed at Framebridge, and we display them proudly in our house because it's easy and affordable. You know exactly how much you're going to pay up front. The frames are gorgeous. You get fast service, free shipping, and it's super great for gifts. And guess what, Liz? Happiness guarantee. If you're not 100% happy with your piece, they will make it right. So Framebridge, get ready because my Valerie Bertinelli, People Magazine, and Marriage Sabbatical Pick of the Week mention is coming at you for framing. See why Framebridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit framebridge.com or a local Framebridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything. That's framebridge.com.
You're listening to Satellite Sisters.
What's a satellite sister?
The person you call when the best thing in your life happens or the worst.
The person that gets you up, gets you going, and gets you through.
And every once in a while, changes your mind.
This podcast is part pep talk, part weekly check-in.
Like grabbing coffee with a friend.
Thanks for being here. Welcome to the Satellite Sisterhood.
You're listening to Satellite Sisters. Thanks for being here today. I'm Leanne Dolan. I live in Pasadena, California. I'm a writer and producer and podcaster. I have two 20-something sons. I just celebrated my 30th wedding anniversary.
That's something, Leanne.
Here's what our question of the week is. Where were you last Tuesday? I was right here. Liz, where were you last Tuesday?
Well, I'm Liz Dolan. Yeah, I was sitting right here in Santa Monica. It's same old, same old. You know, I'm a marketer, I'm a podcaster, and I'm just sitting in my second bedroom last Tuesday. How about you, Julie?
Well, Leanne and Liz, I'm pretty sure I'm going to win this one. I'm Julie Dolan. I'm the eldest sister. I've lived and worked all over the place, all over the world. And Liz and Leanne, last week, I wasn't with you on the show because I was hiking in Chile.
Okay.
Wow.
That's
okay.
Amazing.
You win.
Okay. I win. Love these Satellite Sisters intra-sister competitions. Didn't know we were having one this
No.
Summer. But I was in Chile. I have a full report of my adventure later in the show. And I want to welcome new listeners to Satellite Sisters. You know, we're getting new listeners all the time, Liz and Leanne. And I have a special group of new friends that I made in Chile that I think may be listening. Welcome to the Satellite Sisterhood. Welcome aboard. We're glad you're here.
Oh, very nice, Julie. I cannot wait to hear. Like, this is one of those things where Julie doesn't really tell us anything until we do the show. So we don't really know anything either. Great. Looking forward to it. All right. Also today on the show, Liz, you really went above and beyond in the Entertaining Sisters category. So you watched a lot of things. You must have nothing to do there, Liz. Is that what's
got nothing to do. And partly it's because when I go out side now, I'm being chased by unpiloted vehicles, Leanne, but I will, I'll explain that later.
All right. Julie, a couple of weeks ago when you weren't in Chile, you posed, I think, maybe one of the most provocative questions we've ever had on the show.
Of my lifetime, Leanne, Liz, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. What am I supposed to do about lunch now that my husband is retired? Julie, you got a lot of
really thoughtful and tortured follow-up on that question.
Yes, I did. And I'm going to share some of the results from this, you know, extensive comments from the Satellite Sisterhood. Yes.
Great. And, you know, it wouldn't be Satellite Sisters if we didn't talk about Martha Stewart once on the show. So we're going to later on in the show. Also, obviously, a lot going on in the world. That is not great. We're going to talk about some of the terrible violence that we've had here in California later. All right, let's see. But Liz, first, you're up. Okay,
here's the thing.
Yeah.
I know last week I was like all good with ChatGPT, with artificial intelligence. It was going to be great. I was very optimistic. I have changed my mind, sisters, because I realized, you know, because when you walk your dog, you just see a lot of things going on in your neighborhood. All of a sudden, my neighborhood, I would say over the last 2 years, but especially over the last year, it's just being swarmed by unpiloted vehicles.
Really?
It is just, yes. Or, let's just say things that are being tested here. I think because I'm an urban neighborhood, but it's flat and easy, it must be a good place for people to practice this stuff. So here's the good part. I posted this in the Satellite Sisters Facebook group. I posted a little video of Coco. And maybe you sisters saw that. Coco is one of the many little delivery robots that I see around my neighborhood all the time. And Coco, as someone said in the comments, is like a Pixar character, you know? So you just see Coco going about her business, delivering someone's fast food or delivering someone's groceries. And Coco went zipping by us when I was out walking Hooper last week. So that's why I posted a little video. But then there were quite a few questions in the Facebook group about, wait, how does that work? And it really prompted me to do a little research into Coco. So here's one funny thing, which I didn't know. Coco is actually piloted by someone back in their own bedroom. Speaking of which, those Cocos are actually piloted by like young gamers. So if you imagine like, okay, the little robot is out on the street, but someone is driving Coco. I did not realize that.
Well, so that's better. I mean, because do you still have all those scooters?
No, all the scooters are gone.
Okay.
Except for a couple. We have a few bikes left, but Coco, for those of you who wanted to know, Coco is piloted by a kid in a room with a joystick. So that's what's happening with Coco. And there was another question. Somebody said, well, couldn't someone just like grab Coco and take the food out of the little container? I could not find the answer to that. I'm sorry. I had never thought of chasing down Coco and stealing the takeout food, but that's probably possible. Anyway, so Coco is being tested. I'm fine with that. Coco
Liz,
is not.
I have a question about Coco because we don't have these yet here in Pasadena, even though we're suburban and stuff. I just haven't seen them. So who is the company Coco? Like, who owns it? Is it
so Grubhub? The company is Coco, but they provide this service to restaurants and stores.
Oh, okay.
So if you were, say, a restaurant that wanted to do takeout delivery, you get yourself some Cocos. And from in my research, it is actually cheaper for the companies to have their own Cocos than it is to use like Uber Eats or Grubhub or all of that. So it's a delivery solution for restaurants and stores. So,
okay, thank you. I you took it for granted. Like, oh, look at this Coco. I'm like, what is happening with that thing? All right.
Okay, so Coco is the
still weird, still a little weird, still
but
weird.
But it's fun. It's fun. Coco is the light side of the autonomous vehicle. Now let me tell you about the dark side of the autonomous vehicle.
Okay.
I had also noticed often, again, out walking my dog 3 times a day, Waymo vehicles going by me. And I thought the Waymo car, you know, with the cameras on top and stuff. Mm-hmm. I thought that was just like a Google Maps car because you see those around from time to time, right? Have you ever seen those? So they're just taking pictures and mapping the streets for street views and things. But then I realized I was seeing this Waymo car like literally every time I went out. And then I thought the Waymo car, are they stalking me? What's happening here now with Waymo? Or is this some other thing? So I did a little research. So this is not a mapping car. This is an autonomous vehicle. that they, what the Waymo driver, they call it, it just drives around and around and around in the same neighborhood a lot. And I guess I'm just like one of the neighborhoods. It gathers information in real time. And the specialty of the Waymo car is that it, here's the scary part, sisters, it learns to anticipate what other road users might do. In other words, it understands how a car moves differently than a cyclist, a pedestrian, or another object. And then, dun, 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 it predicts the many possible paths that other road users may take, all in the blink of an eye. Okay, this, this I am not, I'm not done with this. So
why would you have
I just think predict, like, okay, do I really believe the Waymo is going to be able to predict Hooper's behavior when he sees a squirrel across the street and goes darting across the street? No, Julie, I do not. I have a lot of confidence in artificial intelligence, but is artificial intelligence ever going to be able to predict that? I don't think so. But so then I thought, once I thought, am I not noticing that there's nobody behind the wheel? And so now I'm watching for all the Waymo cars. And the Waymo,
and
cars,
Waymo is watching you too. Yeah. I think you should be more concerned about that.
Yes. So there are one or two people in every car, and there is someone behind the wheel of every car.
Oh, because
this is obviously just in the testing mode. But they say the goal of this, the Waymo driver is what the product is called. It's the embodiment of fully autonomous technology. Passengers don't even need to know how to drive. They can sit in the back seat, relax, and enjoy the ride with the Waymo driver, getting them to their destination safely. I'm skeptical. That's all I'm saying. I'm just skeptical. That's, I'm just, and why are they all in my neighborhood? I would like this to be tested somewhere else. Really go through all of your testing out in the middle of nowhere somewhere. But here was the thing that did make me feel better.
Well, that just does them no good. I'm glad they're actually gathering data, and it's not just people theorizing in a room. Like, they're actually out there on the streets. I mean, well, they keep telling us autonomous vehicles are coming, and I want them to be as filled with data and possibilities as they possibly can. And I'm glad they're not in my neighborhood. It does sound creepy, but I'm glad they're somewhere. I'm sure the CEO lives in your neighborhood. That's probably why they're there.
Okay. It's probably a NIMBY situation then. I just do want them tested in somebody's neighborhood, but not necessarily mine. They said the Waymo driver has built up over 20 million miles of real world driving and 20 billion miles in simulation. And I literally think all of that is in Santa Monica. The other day, though, just because I see the car everywhere. The one thing that made me feel better is the other day I saw two Waymo cars pass each other. So I thought, oh, there's more than one. For some reason, I felt better about that. I just really thought it was this one car that was stalking me that I was seeing wherever I go. Anyway, just while I would be curious, is anyone else seeing this in their neighborhood? I know it's coming. I know I'll be just old enough by the time they figure this out to be really grateful. I can sit in the back seat and have an autonomous car take me to my doctor's appointments, right? That's what this is for. Anyway,
that's who they're going to start with, the old people.
Good. Great.
Just more news. The future is here. We got Coco. We got Waymo. It's here, people. That's all.
Liz, there in your neighborhood for sure. Yes. For sure. All right. That's some good reporting, Liz. Thank you. Stay safe out there, Liz. Stay safe. Well, while Julie was in Chile, I was at home and I was finishing the revisions on my next novel. So I am very happy to report there's nothing more delightful than pressing send on the first edition of your book, you know, the first manuscript that goes out, and then you get notes back, and then you press send again when you do the revisions.
Congratulations.
So, thank you. Congratulations. And so does that mean you're done? You don't have to.
No. So this is the first set of revisions, but it's usually the bigger notes. So here's how it works. So I have a book called The Marriage Sabbatical, and it's about a couple that's been married 25 years, and they decide they have an opportunity to take a work sabbatical, and they decide to take it separately. Mm. And then all sorts of things happen after that. Like, you know, there are consequences of their decision. So I turned in the first draft to my editor
in October, and then she works on other books and things like that. So I didn't get the revisions back till mid-December. And she said, right when I was going to write the Hallmark movie, that's when I got the revisions back. So I thought I might have time, but no, I needed to get on the revisions. And so she had a couple of big notes, like, hey, I think we need to do more of this. It was like one note. I don't want to say what it was, like, it had to do with consequences. She said, I think you need more of this in the book. So, and then you have this key scene in the front of the book. I think you need to repeat some version of it at the end of the book. All right. Oh. So those are the two big notes she gave me. So, you know, so editors work in all different ways. Sometimes I've just gotten like a 16-page editor's letter with tiny notes, but she said it's a very clean draft. So if I could work on these two things, there might be a few other things after that, but I'll probably nearly 98% of the way there.
Oh, so, wow. That's great.
Yeah. So the first thing I did was get a terrific cold and just not do anything but watch Emily in Paris for a week. So that was good. And then there was the holidays. Kind of slacked off, you know, 20th on. But then that week between Christmas and New Year's, I sort of stepped it up. Happy to turn those in now. But then she'll take a look at them. And if there's anything she needs me to do or fix, it comes back to me. So that will probably be in a couple of weeks. And then the copy editing process starts, which can be a very long process for me because I make a lot of typos because I'm a bad typist in my book.
It's so surprising, but it's true, Leanne.
It's true. Yes. That's true. True story. So that's it. So for I would say the bulk of the work is done. This book will not come out for a year. That's kind of how long it takes now for publishers to organize the cover and the copy edits and the supply chain issues and the paper and the printing and the marketing. So this book will come out in January, 2024, but I'm happy to, it felt great to turn it in. And it's when you get good notes, like I really jibe with this editor, and it was just like, I saw the notes. I'm like, oh yeah, totally. Exactly. Of course. Yeah. I mean, it's not like they come out of left field, like, you know, why don't you put a narwhal in the book or something? No, it made sense. And then as I was reading through it yesterday, just the last, you know, couple of hours before I sent it, just doing quick revision, I'm like, oh yeah, it's a much better book. Yep. She made it a much better book. Thank you, editor. So it's a lesson to you if you're out there and you're a writer and you talk to a lot of young writers who are like, oh, I don't want to show my work to anyone. Or I've met with writers who literally will say, I don't want to change one word. Like, I want to self-publish because as if this is a perfect manuscript and I don't want to change one word. I'm like, okie doke, good luck. Because it really makes you a better writer when people read it who are editors or novelists themselves and can give you great notes. So I'm happy to have that done, that round. And, you know, now I have some time. I'm going to get back to that Hallmark movie, people. Going to get back to that Hallmark movie. Oh, but I did want to mention, you were probably, I know many of you waiting breathlessly on Friday, checking your email over and over again. Where's Pep Talk? Where's Pep Talk, Leanne? I totally forgot. So that's the good news and the bad news. Like, I was so in the zone with the rewrites. I got to like Friday afternoon and I thought, wow, I'm really glad I did all that. I really got a chunk done and things are good. I'm feeling good. And now I have this extra time. And then I went, oh, I forgot to write Pep Talk. No wonder I had so much time. So you're going to get a double special issue this week, Pep Talkers. Ooh. So if you haven't subscribed, please do. It's a free newsletter. So you can go to us, satellitesisters.com, and that will pop up. And I'm just going to make this week's Pep Talk boffo because I definitely have time to write. Okay. But anyway, that's what I've been doing. Revisions done. Check.
Congratulations. Yeah. Subscribe to Pep Talk. And as long as we're talking subscriptions, remember Satellite Sisters has a YouTube channel now. So I want to encourage people to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We do post every week's podcast episode on the YouTube channel. So if you go there, you'll see it's a video version of the audio. So you don't actually get to see us. I don't want to raise people's hopes too much. We haven't gone that far yet, but it is, and the complete show notes are there too. So I'm thinking, like, if you subscribe to YouTube, then you always get a reminder when we post something new, which is good. But it's also a really easy way. If you have a friend
who you've been saying, you know what, you should really listen to the Satellite Sisters podcast. And they say to you, I don't really do podcasting. I don't understand.
And, Liz, you know, no judgment.
Take that voice away, Liz.
I'm sure your friends don't talk to you in that voice, but in your head, they have that voice, right? You're like, oh, come on. It's so easy to listen to a podcast. Anyway, for that person, I say, just send them our podcast from our YouTube channel. It's really a day because everybody goes on YouTube, right? And to learn how to do anything, you have to go on YouTube now. So go to the Satellite Sisters channel and subscribe. You get the complete show in the show notes there every week. Also, not for nothing, but all of the back episodes of Cooking with Liz are there. And that actually is video. That was a lot of video for multiple years during the peak of the pandemic when I was, it's not going to teach you how to cook. It's me learning how to cook. So if you want to just witness the, well, maybe.
They're delightful episodes. Don't sell yourself short there.
Anyway, it's all at the Satellite Sisters YouTube channel. We encourage you to spend some time there. It is a very fun way to just, you can turn on the podcast while you're doing something else on your computer. Very easy way to listen. So there you go. Satellite Sisters on YouTube.
Liz, I did just look up Coco on LinkedIn. Of course, they're headquartered in Santa Monica. That's why. Okay. There you go. So yeah, that's why they got those robots rolling there, and Houston and Austin. So it, you know, let us know if you've seen those Coco robots. They're adorable. They are adorable,
and they're non-threatening, unlike the big Waymo cars bearing down no driver.
Okay, stay with us.
Liz, you look really happy. What's happening there? A lot of things going my way, Leanne, but here was the best news in my inbox this morning is I got my email from ButcherBox saying, we're starting to get your next box ready. And I just love when this happens because then you click on the link, you can go in, you can see what's on sale, you can get the best value for your next order, and then boom, customized box showing up in a few weeks at my place. I love being in the ButcherBox family, and they give me plenty of time to get ready every time.
There is good communication in the ButcherBox family. I agree, Liz. They want you to be happy. Yeah. They want you to have
peace. It's better than many families. Better than many families.
That's right. It's right. You know, we love the 100% grass-fed beef, the free-range organic chicken, the pork that's raised crate-free, wild-caught seafood. They're humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. And as Liz said, delivered right to your doorstep. Free shipping always, and you get that customized box of everything you want. ButcherBox, thank you so much for bringing us peace of mind, and keep those emails coming. Liz, today's offer is spectacular. ButcherBox is giving Satellite Sisters listeners free ground beef for the life of your membership, plus an additional $20 off your first order.
Okay. Oh, that is the deal of the century, people. What are you waiting for?
Free ground beef for life of your membership, plus an additional 20% off your first order. Use the link butcherbox.com/sisters and use code SISTERS to get free ground beef for life plus $20 off your first box. That's butcherbox.com/sisters, code SISTERS. Thanks, ButcherBox. Liz, some people say it's spring, but I call this Osea season.
Oh, you do? Okay. I like it. We can make that happen. Osea season. I'm in.
Well, you know, there are a lot of events this time of year, right? You have spring holidays, you have graduations, there's Mother's Day, baby showers, weddings, wedding showers. Don't you want to be moisturized, Liz? Don't you want your skin to look as good as it can possibly look when you show up at your high school reunion? I mean,
yes, I do. Yes. Yeah, for sure. Plus, it's a big gift season, and Osea is great for that, too. So,
right. Oh, yeah. Give your skin a glow up with Osea's clinically proven seaweed-infused skincare that provides results you can see and confidence you can feel. And right now, you're going to get 10% off your first order with our code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. You know why we love their moisturizing products? Like their anti-aging body balm? Because it's silky
And it's a serum lotion hybrid. It just melts into your skin, Liz. It leaves you glowing, you know? Glowing.
I love the term glow up. I'm going to start using that more. I just love it.
Well, Liz of CMMalibu.com, it's a glow up in a box. Liz, get it. Get on it. If you want to celebrate Osea season by glowing up and adding moisture with their fantastic moisturizing products, here's what you do. Glow from the inside out with clean vegan skin and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code SATSISTERS at OseaMalibu.com. You'll get free samples with every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Head to OseaMalibu.com, and Osea is O-S-E-A. OseaMalibu.com and use code SATSISTERS for 10% off. Thanks, Osea.
Welcome back. And Julie, welcome back to the United States. You took a trip to Chile. It surprised Liz and I. All of a sudden, you were going to Chile. Who knew? So tell us all about it. What was happening there in Chile? Why'd you go? What'd you do?
Well, yes, sisters, I spent last week on a hiking trip in the beautiful, amazing, and very different district, the Lake District of Chile. Now, are you familiar with the Lake District of Chile?
No.
Well, don't worry. Neither was I. In fact, prior to the trip, when I would tell people I was going to the Lake District in Chile, I would say, well, I'm going to the Lake District in Chile. Well, as a question, because I was hoping that they knew something about it, because quite frankly, we didn't really know where we were going. This was a back roads hiking trip. Now, listeners will know that Liz and I went to Patagonia on a back roads trip. Mm-hmm. And then last
Argentina.
Year, that's in Argentina. Exactly. And we had a wonderful time. So this was supposed to be another hiking trip that promised a string of gorgeous glacial lakes and volcanoes. And it's located, you fly to Santiago, which is the capital of Chile. And then you get on another plane, a smaller plane, and you fly another hour and a half south. And that's the start of the Lake District. And they're, if you look on a map, they're kind of in a line, these beautiful lakes. Some of them are as big as 10 miles by 20 miles wide. I mean, they're huge. And then this string of, can I say, active volcanoes, sisters? I mean, So the area, and also it was summertime in Chile now. This is sort of the peak summertime. I know it's probably cold, rainy, drizzly, wherever you are, but it's beautiful in Chile this time of year. And all the schools are closed. People are on their summer vacations right now. And so this area is also, people on the trip, it's a group trip of hikers, you know, people said, well, it kind of looks a little like upstate New York, maybe a little like the Upper Peninsula in Michigan, or maybe the, you know, Oregon a little bit, but with completely different flora and fauna. Nice. So, I mean, that was amazing to see.
Well, Oregon does have the volcanoes. I'm not so sure about upstate New York with the volcanoes.
I got to call it there. Upstate New York. Come on. Were those people from upstate New York that said that? I mean, Leanne, volcanoes.
Have you been to the Lake District, Leanne? Are you really already at the start of my description going to totally refute this when you don't know?
No, I'm saying the people from New York. I'm saying the people from New York, like, if you don't have volcanoes, it's nothing like it. Okay. I'm on your side, Julie. And just a weird FYI, a chunk of my new book takes place in the Lake District in Chile.
Really?
Yes.
I mean, yes. Of course, Leanne never tells us in her books.
How would we know?
We would not know that. Okay. Yeah. So how did you know about the Lake District in Chile?
Well, I was looking, I said they go on this sabbatical. And so the husband chooses to go on a motorcycle adventure through Patagonia. I had to start watching all kinds of YouTube videos and looking at touring companies that did these and learn a little bit about the Lake District in Chile. That's all. Just an FYI. Okay, carry on. No, you're doing fine. It looks like a very, very special place. I'm underlining that for you.
Yes.
Volcanoes, I mean, are
volcanoes. And these were, you know, and this is, I would have to say, that has been like one of the things that I wanted to see was alive, was to see a volcano, like up close. And these are beautiful snow-capped volcanoes. And some of them, we saw one that was 10,000 feet high, okay? So as big as Mount Fuji. And the way that volcanoes like dominate the environment, because many, the first place we started our hiking trip was this beautiful resort town called Pucon. I didn't really get the language down. I mean, I have started Duolingo and I am doing Spanish as my personal goal this year.
Oh, good for you.
I'm only on lesson one, so I can say Juan eats apples. That's all I got. So, but in this town of Pucon, there is the Villa Rica volcano, and this is the most active volcano in South America right now. I mean, it's smoking. I've put some pictures on Facebook of this volcano. I mean, plumes of smoke were coming out, and in fact, my husband was just like, because he's the geologist, was like over the moon when he saw this active volcano, and it actually had pyroclastic material spewing out of it at night. So that was pretty exciting.
Wait, what word was that?
Pyroclastic material.
Is that the glass that kind of spews out of volcanoes?
Yes. So okay. It's just stuff coming out of volcano. Okay. That's okay. It.
I'm a volcano expert myself because I just saw one in Hawaii.
Yes. Okay. So I'm not an expert. I would describe myself as a volcano enthusiast. That's what I am.
Okay.
But because there was other seismic activity that happened while we were there, that they raised the alert level to code yellow. So that was pretty exciting. But as my husband said, there's really not much time between code yellow and code red. That's what you have to understand.
Oh, okay.
It's not like, code yellow, and then you have like 2 weeks before the whole thing blasts. I mean, it could happen at any time. So it's sort of interesting that people choose to live right next to an active volcano and then come to visit this on their summer vacation. Mm. But it is amazing to see. So that part of the trip was fascinating. And we had an opportunity to hike on the volcanoes, under the volcanoes. We went in a cave, sisters, like 300 meters below a volcano. I'm sure both of you would have hated it, but it was... Yes. Leah, you in particular.
This trip sounds terrible to me.
Combines all the things that you would hate, Leah.
It does, right there.
Hiking, caves. Oh my God.
Okay. And hiking around it to see volcanoes from different sides. Just, I can't say enough about that. But the other part about Chile that was so interesting and so fascinating has got to be the flora and fauna. And we were very lucky. We had a wonderful guide on our trip, Igor, who is an expert in all the flora in Chile. And I just cannot say enough about the trees in Chile. We had the opportunity to hike through old growth forests with these 200, 300 foot trees. And a lot of them were from like the beech family. And Igor, our guide, would always give us the name of the tree first in Spanish. And then he would give it in Mapuchin, which is the indigenous language. And then he would give it in Latin. And so my retention of the name of the trees was about 1%. I did not get it at all. But I can tell you there were big trees there. In fact, there was tree hugging on our trip. Okay?
Oh, forest bathing. Did you do some forest bathing?
Absolutely, Lynn. Absolutely. But people were hugging these trees. Okay. Now, I have an assignment for all satellite sisters. I want you to Google monkey puzzle trees. These are trees that you see throughout this area of Chile. And they're called the Araucaria trees. And they are just, and I want you to Google the picture and then blow it up so you can see how unusual these trees are, because their bark looks like alligator scale, or when they're young trees, it looks like a pineapple on the side.
Oh, wow.
And then they have these they have these super spiky branches and leaves, and they're so otherworldly. I mean, you just feel like you've stepped back in prehistoric time when you're in a forest with these trees. You don't, you just, you know, at any moment you expect like an Ewok to pop around the corner or maybe a baby Triceratops or something, you know? I mean, that part
That's
of it,
cool.
These are really, really different, cool, and you feel like you're in some other place. And that's a great thing to have happen on a vacation, to go yes. to, you know, to go to an environment that's so unlike where you live, I think, you know. The other thing they have a lot of in the forest that we hiked in, you know, we were lucky, we had great weather and it was, you know, perfect climate and just, you know, fun hiking with all these people. We also learned about Chilean bamboo. I was surprised to see that there was a lot of that in the forest, but it is native to Chile. But the Chilean bamboo grows a white flower. Now the bamboo plant only does it once every 25 years, but obviously there's a lot of bamboo in the forest. And then, you know, if you, well, you have a lot of bamboo in California. You're yeah. from, uh-huh. yeah. And you know, one of the other side effects of having bamboo is it attracts rats, right? Because yeah. rats
yes.
like to eat the bamboo. Mm-hmm. Well, wait till you hear this. The Chilean bamboo, they have the white flower has these seeds. And guess the rats love them. They love these bamboo seeds. And so they eat them, but they're salty. The seeds are very salty. So then the rats feel like they have to drink a lot of water because they've eaten all these seeds. And then they drink the water and then the seeds expand in their stomachs and the rats explode.
Okay.
Exploding.
Thank you. Rats. Okay. Well, that's okay. worth the trip to Latin America.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Exploding rats. Come on, people.
I got to put that in my book. Wait, okay. I stopped the presses.
Okay. These rats explode and then they become the fertilizer for the bamboo plant to expand. How about that?
Okay. Circle of life. Circle
okay.
of life.
I am telling you, we have a couple of New Yorkers that were on the trip
yeah.
and they heard about the exploding rats. Okay, the wheels started turning. They're like, how can we import this Chilean bamboo to New York and we can explode all this? Is they were all in on
uh-huh
that.
Yes,
okay. you can see how that
you can
would
see
happen.
That down on the subway tracks, just a lot of seeds, bamboo oh. seeds down
yeah
there.
There was just that there was that level of discussion we were yes. having with our New York hikers, because they just, you know, well, how would they import the plants? What did the Chilean bamboo grow in New York? How many rats could they explode in?
Okay. All right. I feel like we've heard. I
okay. Like, all right. All right. Okay. But I don't know why George Lucas never did a movie set in the Chilean forests, because these trees were so unusual and it was just great to be there. So that part of the trip was amazing. We hiked up volcanoes to see various places and I love that. So
what did you eat?
As a trip, there were just a lot of surprises, like, you mm-hmm. know. Well, one of the most surprising things about this area of Chile is this is northern Patagonia, so south of Santiago, that in the mid 1800s, a lot of German immigrants came to this area and helped and settled the area. And then they had another wave of German immigration before World War II, then after World War II, which was complicated because you had both German Jews coming to this area as well as Nazis. But oh. the end result was there are over 500,000 German descendants that live in this section of Chile. And one day we stopped at a German restaurant for lunch. OMG. This place had grilled pork, chicken, and lamb. It had three types of mashed potatoes. It had purple sauerkraut, regular sauerkraut. It had sausage, pulled pork. And then of course there was a salad bar with potato salad and pickles.
German.
Very, very German. So I had a plate that was probably about 5 inches high, just of German food. It was so surprising, but they have a whole German community there. They have a German language school there, so many kids learn it. They have a separate German newspaper in this area. I just did not see that coming at all. I couldn't believe it. So
fun fact, there is a German town in my book.
Okay, well, I hope there's some sauerkraut in the book.
I am going to add the sauerkraut in. It's sort of a passing mention, like, oh, this is weird that this town was started by, 19th century, 18th century German immigrants. But okay, I'm going to adding the sauerkraut, not adding the exploding rats is what I would say. Sauerkraut in.
I think that exploding rat story, you are going to be able to tell that at every dinner party from now on in.
Okay. Well, you are.
So the trip was just filled, with just all kinds of great surprises, whether it would be the German food, the beautiful trees, the mountains. And I think that's what you want when you travel, is to, to be stimulated, to be challenged, and it just, it motivates you. So, we, all of our guides were great. Igor, who has a Russian name and a German last name, he was from that region and had studied all about the animals and plants. He said every time he goes into the forest, it's a surprise for him. And I thought that was such a great, thought. And it inspired me to always be challenging myself to try new things and to look for surprises and to embrace surprises. So all in all, sisters, viva Chile. It's a great country. And now you know where the Lake District is.
Yes, as do you. Good report, Julie. Good report. And I have to say, the photos you put up on Facebook are beautiful. So if you're not a member of our Facebook group and you want to see Julie's photos, now's the time to do it. Maybe I'll drop a few in Pep Talk this week. And Liz, we have a link in the show notes to the Backroads, the touring company.
Backroads, so the company that did it. Yeah, I put in a link to even to the specific trip, so you can see Julie's whole itinerary if you want to go there in your mind.
Julie, fantastic. Thank you. Great report. We're glad you're back safely and uninjured. And sounds like did you start to talk about where next?
Yes, absolutely, Leon. Yes, everybody. I don't know where next, but I will definitely do another hiking trip for sure.
Oh, maybe you should consider a motorcycle trip with the German Shepherd. Have you considered that? Because our friend and former producer Courtney Cole texted Liz and I this story from CNN, and she's like, right up your alley. Julie, there is a Canadian woman, and she and her 75-pound German Shepherd, Moxie, are traveling around 90 countries through Central America, North and South America, Africa, Europe, and Asia on a motorcycle. That's right. Jess, who's the human, she's going to be on the front of the motorcycle. And Moxie, who's the 75-year-old German Shepherd, she sits in the back of the motorcycle. She's all strapped in. She wears ski goggles and a protective.
Really?
Yeah. And they're motorcycling around. She said she just wanted to prove that they could do this. Now, there's an interesting article. And again, this is all in my book, so it's weird about how uneasy she was on the motorbike, how she had to take all these lessons. I was like, okay, I got that part right. But that Stone, her husband, and Moxie, and they didn't want a sidecar or a trailer. So she's right on the back of the bike. The photos alone are spectacular, particularly if you're a German Shepherd fan, but just a lot of funny photos of this beautiful German Shepherd in the ski goggles on the back of the bike.
Okay.
So is that your fantasy, Liam, if you take a marriage sabbatical to just go one-on-one, just you and your German Shepherd around the world, that's it?
No, I think I'd go one-on-one with my German Shepherd to just like a nice beach house and live there for a year. That is my, again, I'm not interested in motorcycles, wind in my face. It seems like a lot, you know, but you can, she's, you know, wants to publicize a nonprofit called Girl Up, which is a girl-centered leadership development initiative. And you can follow her along at Go Roughly, R-U-F-F-L-Y, Go Roughly around the world. But very cute. But I would like to just have one picture with my dog on the back of a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Put the ski goggles on staff. Some great photos. Anyways, it was fun to see. Fun to see. All right, Jewel. Great reporting. Thank you very much. Next time, take your dog. That's all I'm saying. Think about it. Consider it.
Liz, you know, I am now just a devotee to my prose regimen, right? My hair care regimen.
I know that, Leon. Leon, I'm looking at your hair right now on Zoom. Even on Zoom, your hair looks fantastic.
I'm in training for this book tour, Liz.
Perfect. Yeah.
I'm going to be out there. I'm going to be, you know, seeing people and photos will be taken. And I want to look great. At least have my hair look great. And I feel like with prose, I am well on my way. And it's because it's personalized for me, Liz. Yes. Okay. Prose is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do. So you take the in-depth consultation, you get the made-to-order stuff, and then you follow, you know, the instructions, Liz, and things get better. I take my vitamins. They're for me. They say Leon on it. I do, you know, the shampoo. I do the conditioner. I do the leave-in conditioner. Sometimes I do the pre-shampoo scalp treatment. I don't that all the time, but that is one of, it's in my toolbox, my prose toolbox.
Whatever it is, it's all paying off for you, Leon. You've just got a good hair game. Thanks to prose.
Thank you. Of the millions and millions of possible formulas, Liz, only one is uniquely mine. And that is why I love my pros. Pros is so confident that you'll bring out the best in your hair that they're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/sisters. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/sisters. And pros is spelled P-R-O-S-E. Pros.com/sisters. Thanks, pros, for great hair.
Okay, sisters, I have an update/correction from last week. So I just wanted to let you know this is Martha Stewart related, and I should never have said what I said. So here's the thing. On last week's show, I gave you my complete review of The Bedford, which is Martha Stewart's new restaurant in Las Vegas. Julie, I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to last
week's show. I did, Liz. I loved last week's show, and your report from Vegas was outstanding.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, I did mention that I was talking to my server, and my server said, among other things, like she had met Martha a couple times and all of that, but they were given tapes so they could study how Martha pronounced things. And as she was telling me this, she was holding a bottle of red wine in her hand. So I think that's what might have led me down the wrong path, sisters. So she said, for instance, did you know instead of grapes that Martha says grapes? And I thought, huh, that's interesting. And that's what I said on last week's show.
Yes. Well,
what was I thinking? What are the chances that Martha Stewart would be wrong about something? So, but I hadn't really thought it through when I said it. And then on Facebook, one of our listeners, she just suggested that maybe what Martha had really said, this is Joan posted this. She had Joan Holder said, great podcast as usual. Just a thought. Do you think the waitress in Martha's restaurant really meant crepes, not grapes, and that Martha was pronouncing it correctly? Well, of course, Joan, of course. You are correct.
Yeah.
Like how dare I think that I might have caught Martha in some kind of mistake. She obviously was talking about crepes, not grapes. And it was either the server misunderstood But more likely, it was me misunderstanding the server. I was led astray again because of the bottle of red wine. I thought we were talking about grapes. Anyway, obviously, Martha is teaching servers that it's pronounced crap, not crepe. And I would just like to apologize to everyone.
I did have a good laugh about the grips, Liz. I have.
But Julie, really, the arrogance of me thinking that I might be correct and Martha would be wrong, that's just not right. That's more, once again, Martha is not wrong. That is all. That is my correction from last week. Thank you, Joan, for pointing out something that should have been incredibly obvious.
I don't care. I'm going to call him grips.
I can never say him the other way now. For sure. Well, I also wanted to do a little follow-up and a big thank you to everyone in the Satellite Sisterhood that wrote to us at our Facebook group about, like, when I asked the question that I needed a lunch policy because my husband has now moved into semi-retirement and he was going to be around a lot at lunch. And so we got so many comments, to create a special meal for your special life partner in the middle of the day, said no one. No one said that, okay? You know, no one. People said to stand firm, okay? And that do not serve lunch. But here's the thing, and this is what I love. They had so many helpful hints. Lisa said, rotisserie chicken. Okay, you can see this. You buy one of those, pop that in the fridge, they can help themselves, right? That was an excellent idea. Louise, she said, make extras. People ask me, does my husband eat leftovers? Well, he's going to eat leftovers because that's what he's going to get. Lori said that maybe I should try to encourage him to join a retired old men eating out group. Okay, that could be. Ooh. I don't know. Okay. Jude thought that maybe in a joking way that I should start day drinking, that would solve the problem about what to do at lunch. Okay. Laughing out loud. But, lunch classes that I could teach my husband, sandwich 101, how to make his own sandwich. Others encouraged me to put him in charge of bulk food shopping. And I felt like this one really resonated. Like, I believe that my husband can really go far in the area of big box bulk food shopping. But this could really be for in his personal growth would be good. But I think what I'm going to do is stand firm and incorporate all of these ideas of leaving salad fixings in the fridge, creating his own shelf that he knows he could go there. But certainly under no conditions will I be serving lunch to him.
I'm glad you got so much feedback on this, Julie, because it's an issue that I cannot relate to at all. So this is good. I'm glad there are a lot of people out there in the sisterhood who have been through this couple's transition. It's obviously a major point in any marriage. Okay, moving on. Entertaining sisters. I have an announcement to make. Everything, Everywhere, All at Once actually is a fantastically fun movie. Okay. Oh. I just want to say that. I know that I have expressed skepticism, not so much on the show, but just like in real life. Normally, when I see the words science fiction, I'm out. Right. And I suspect you guys might be the same. I don't know why. Did someone teach us not to enjoy this genre? Anyway, I think you should not think about it as science fiction. So the other night I had a couple of friends over. My friend Mary, who you guys know, it was her birthday. My neighbor Deborah, who you guys know, she's my movie watching buddy now. So the three of us, I made dinner. Thank you very much. The African peanut stew was delicious. So I made that. Everyone enjoyed that. Then we sat down and all of us a little skeptical about Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Because on the one hand, I don't know, a genre issue. But on the other hand, it's like winning all these prizes. Who doesn't love Michelle Yao? I mean, it's just there's all these reasons why I was beginning to think, I am going to have to watch this movie. So the reason I had the two of them over is like, that way, if you feel like it's not for you, then you can just start talking and it can be fun. You don't have to bail on it. Anyway, I just say, all three of us found this movie kind of delightful. But you have to go into it knowing that it's not about making sense or following the story or understanding. You just have to ride along on sort of a wave of wackiness, which you are happy to do because all of the performances are just really super fun. There are times where you literally have no idea what's happening, but that is the point, because there are just a lot of, there's some multiverses involved here. There's a lot of montages involved here. I would say to the two of you, I think in the right mood, if you're in an anything goes kind of mood, you would really enjoy this movie.
So
that's
right, Liz, I'll take it under advisement. Mm-hmm.
And for those of you who have seen it, I will just say one word that was my favorite word in the entire movie, and that was Rakakuni. You know what I'm talking about. Just going to say Rakakuni. And I also want to compare and contrast Everything Everywhere All at Once. The other movie I watched this weekend, which, you know, again, the Oscar noms came out today. Both of these movies got a lot of nominations. The Fabelmans.
Oh, okay.
I lasted 30 minutes in The Fabelmans and I was out. Yes.
Wow.
I don't know. I just don't like movies about the 50s.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't care about the 50s either.
Anyway, I know it's Steven Spielberg, but it was just too slow for me. Versus Everything Everywhere All at Once is like so fast.
Well, that's your speed, Liz. Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah, that's true, Julie.
I think you'll just get to the Rakakuni part and you will see why I found that so delightful. Anyway, congratulations to Everything Everywhere All at Once and The Fabelmans, whatever. I don't know. Okay. Other things in Entertaining Sisters. I also binged all of the new episodes of Breakpoint. So this is the documentary on Netflix that is about tennis players. And so it is, if you've been following Leon, I'm sure in your family, you've all watched the Formula One Netflix documentary, right?
Yes.
Drive to Survive. Okay. So this is
which has been a huge global hit and attracted all kinds of new viewers to Formula One. We are longtime viewers of F1, but so I'm sure every sport it now wants to do something similar because it's been such a hit.
Every sport. I have not been, you know, I work in track and field. I have not been in a meeting in the last 2 years where somebody hasn't said, we need our own Drive to Survive. I would just like to have a policy. Nobody's allowed to say that anymore. Okay. It's so obvious. It's so obvious. Please stop saying it. If you want to do that, please go do it. But no more saying it in a meeting. Anyway, obviously the tennis people got their act together, and this is the same production company that did Drive to Survive. So it's behind the scenes in the tennis world. And what I really like about it, well, two things. First, it is looking at sort of the young guns coming up on both the men's and women's side that are about to take over from the grizzled veterans. You've got your Djokovic's, you've got your Nadal's, you've got your Federer's, you've got Serena retired, all of that. So a whole new generation is coming up. So they pick eight of the new generation and they follow them through a whole season. So if you start watching right now, you will see that they are in last year's Australian Open, which is going on right now. So, Julie, I know we talked about it a little bit yesterday, and you pointed out, which is correct, that all of the young guns they picked to follow have already been eliminated in this year's Australian Open, right?
Yes, that's correct. But I can't wait to see this. And I understand from others that you shouldn't watch the actual Australian Open and Breakpoint at the same time because you're going to get very confused.
You're going to get very confused.
What is real and what is not?
Yes. Yeah. So when I say young guns, for those of you who are tennis fans, you might know Taylor Fritz, Casper Ruud, Matteo Berrettini on the men's side, Ons Jabeur on the women's side. She is the Tunisian woman who's the first African woman to make it into a Grand Slam final. Maria Sakkari. Anyway, really interesting character. So, but the most important thing it does for me is answer the question I've always wanted answered, which is, what happens after they lose a match? Like when they walk through that tunnel,
yeah.
Then what happens? Right, Leanne? Haven't you always wanted to know? Like,
right.
that right. is a that's a hard life. And as they keep saying, their whole theme about tennis is that everybody loses most of the time, right? That that's right. just the way a tennis tournament works. Only one person wins. You're all by yourself. You're not on a team. And like half the people, boom, they go out in the first round. So you see mm-hmm. a lot of those moments where these young, highly touted players, like they lose in the first round and then they walk through that tunnel and then they have to talk to their coach or talk to their family. There are some really great scenes that they did of like, it's Matteo Berrettini playing in last year's Australian Open, but they're also filming his parents at home in Rome, watching him on TV as he, spoiler alert, he lost last year. And so it's just really interesting. And one other big insight, they spend a lot of time inside their hotel rooms, because that's obviously where tennis players live all the time, because it's a tour. They're never home anywhere. Their rooms are unbelievably messy. Like you just one after the other, after the other. It's just piles of clothes and rackets and free stuff from sponsors. And most of them have like a, you know, a husband with them or a girlfriend with them. Or, and so that you have two 20 somethings just with stuff thrown all over the rooms. It's that, that part of it is highly entertaining. Anyway, I would say if you like tennis, you'll really like this. But even if you don't like tennis, there's not a lot of tennis. There's enough tennis in it to give you the feeling for just how tense these matches are. But a lot of it is what it is to compete at the highest level and be in a sport like that where you're all by yourself out there every time and you're yeah. competing. You don't have any
okay,
of the
good recommendation.
So there
good
you go.
Recommendation.
Okay. Yeah. So, and then one last compare and contrast. Meanwhile, the old dogs of tennis. So now we are talking your Agassiz, your McEnroes, your Changs, your Roddicks. They have just announced they are competing in $1 million pickleball tournament.
That's did so you read this? Smart. It's yeah. so smart. It's so funny and so smart.
It's so smart. So ESPN is going to do this live. It's $1 million purse, pickleball. It's happening in like Hollywood, Florida. I forget when. I'll put it in the show notes. But like that is going to be entertaining, right?
Yes. They yeah. They can't wait to see him play. Yeah. Can't wait to see those guys with the paddles. Yeah.
And at that point, well, you got nothing to lose. They are well beyond the caring if they win or lose.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, no, I don't think so, Liz. Those are very, very competitive professional athletes. Okay, I don't think I'm sure that they are practicing like crazy off site. And I can't wait to see McEnroe because he has been so dismissive of pickleball.
Oh, really?
Like every chance. Oh yeah. On the coverage, every chance he gets, he talks about like how like pickleball has more injuries than skiing. It's yeah. like, he said, it's the most dangerous sport in America, pickleball. Cause he's like, you're just going to break something or fall over. So he's very pro tennis. So I think it's funny that he's doing it, but they are all super competitive athletes. Okay. I don't think they're going to go out there and like, just, you know, hit the ball around and think it's hilarious. Oh no. I think they're in training right now. Which
well,
be
just FYI, sisters, there is an amateur tournament that is part of this $1 million pickleball slam, and the amateur is going to win 10 grand. So if you think your game is good enough, you might want to get in on the action.
Okay.
Oof. All right. We've covered a lot of sporting news today. A lot of sporting, motorcycling, hiking, pickleball, all kinds of things. Great show. Thank you. Sisters, that's it. We've come to the end of the show. Of course, we'd like to thank our engineer, Sergio Enriquez. Thank you, Sergio. We'd also like to thank our graphic designer, Emily Loudermilk, who does such fun graphics for the show every week. If you want to see Emily's work, the best place to do that is follow us on Instagram, @SatSisters. Also, go ahead and subscribe to Pep Talk. We feature her graphics every week on Pep Talk. We like to spread them around because they're so much fun. Let's see. Oh, our to-do list for the week. Liz, what do you have?
Well, I have a friend who is coming this afternoon who is staying with me for the rest of the week. He's in town on business. So I have to dismantle the Satellite Sisters podcasting studio that is in the guest bedroom and move it into the living room as soon as we're done. So he will have the room to himself.
There you go. Flexible space, Liz. Flexible space. Not your problem, Julie, because you're in the closet. No one stays in your closet.
No, not so far, Leanne. But on my to-do this week, Leanne, it's still chili week here. And so I plan to make some empanadas. We had an empanada demonstration. And I now understand that it's all the folding and the molding is so important to your empanadas. So I'm going to try that at home. I also ordered some Isabel Allende books. They didn't come before the trip. So now I think I'm going to reread and reread some of her novels.
Oh, great idea.
Oh, great.
Yep. Fantastic. Well, mine is a little bit more serious. Or we've just had a terrible stretch of violence here in America, from the six-year-old shooting her teacher in a classroom to the mass shootings, three in California in the last 10 days, the one in Monterey Park, the one in Northern California yesterday. So the one in Monterey Park, if you don't know, really hit close to home for me, literally and physically. Monterey Park's only about 7 miles where I live, here in the San Gabriel Valley in Southern California. Of course, we've all heard the story. It was at the Lunar New Year's celebration they were having there. Monterey Park is 65% Chinese. Lunar New Year, such a wonderful, joyous time in Southern California, Liz, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's because it's very different than American New Year, which is just like drink a lot and get hungover. But like Lunar New Year is joyous, and Asian
it's
people
a real family very, celebration, real yeah, family celebration.
And they want to include everybody in it. And there's always food and there's costumes and there's visiting elders and they like give little packets of money to kids and everything. It's just a wonderful, joyous celebration. So, and that particular shooting at the ballroom dance studio, you can imagine. For those of you who are new listeners, don't know that I do ballroom dancing, something I picked up about 5 years ago. I have come to really love the sort of goofy, rainbow, unusual coalition that are ballroom dancers. There are lots of studios in Southern California, so I haven't danced at that particular studio, but I have danced at others around town. When I heard about the news, I immediately texted my dance teacher, "Are you okay? Did you happen to be there? Were any of your students there?" It's just so terrible. I mean, you've been to my dance shows, Liz. These are just like,
it's a little bit of everybody. It's a little bit of everybody. Yes.
It is. There's nobody threatening at a ballroom dance studio. You know, people have gone there and they've put on their fun dresses and they're trying to rumba and they're trying to cha-cha. I read a lot of pieces this week about how the Asian community particularly loved the Latin dances because they were so fun and free. And so they were rumbaing and cha-chaing and just enjoying themselves. So that particular mass shooting hit me so hard. And so I have been taking some time off of dance, but I'm going to get back into it. I feel like I need to go back to a dance studio, not stay away from a dance studio. So that's on my to-do list this week as I think of all the victims of the terrible violence in America in the last couple of weeks.
Yes.
So anyway, that's it. That's it. All right, sisters, have a great week.
You too,
Leanne.
Yes.
And don't forget, call your satellite sister.